From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a closer look at stories out of our radio newsrooms from coast to coast. Today On Deadline is checking in on unrest sweeping America's college campuses as students take over buildings and block roads in protests of the ongoing war in Gaza and the United States' support of Israel. The Gaza Health Ministry reports that in 200 days of war, more than 42,000 Palestinians have been killed, and nearly 39,000 of those were civilians. That includes 10,091 women and 15,780 children. College students from across America are calling for an end to the war, and they're doing it by disrupting a very expensive educational system and in a way that some say makes Jewish students feel targeted and unsafe. Here's the latest on everything that's going on. After a weekend full of protests, even more encampments had popped up across the country by midweek. Student journalists from Columbia University at WKCR documented the tension live on the airwaves. Protests against the war in Gaza started almost as soon as the war started. Since earlier this month, they've been going on at campuses that include Columbia University in New York, NYU, MIT, Yale, USC, and countless others across the country. In response to the protests, Columbia ordered students to clear out and leave encampments set up on the campus or otherwise face suspension. And then that brought escalation. On Monday, students barricaded themselves inside buildings. On Tuesday evening, dozens were arrested. Things have also become especially tense at the University of Southern California, which had to cancel the speech of its valedictorian at graduation over alleged anti-Semitic bigotry on her social media. After news of the canceled speech broke out, threats began pouring in, and the entire graduation ceremony had to be canceled. Jonathan Park is a USC junior majoring in applied mathematics. He's also the managing digital editor of USC's student newspaper, The Daily Trojan. He joined Odyssey to share more on the situation going on at his campus.
How disruptive have they been to daily life on campus? You guys have to be going into finals, or at least finals preparation soon, right? I mean, classes are winding down, but still, it's a busy academic time. So even with all the noise and the chaos, how disruptive have they been? Any violence? And has it been disruptive, or has it been fairly contained to one area of the campus?
The short answer as to whether it's been violent is absolutely not. Our reporters were there from start to finish on Wednesday on the protest. I personally was there at 4 a.m. when they were beginning to set up. We had other reporters take over and watch as they continued their protest. They had a schedule posted that included poetry readings, just basic speeches, things like that. It was completely peaceful. The only times where there were violence was when the Department of Public Safety came by Wednesday morning about 11 a.m. and they started clamping down on the tents that were at Alumni Park, which was where that protest took place. There were disagreements about whether to put signs up and whether that was against policy. Once they couldn't come to an agreement on that, they started forcibly taking down those signs. They started forcibly taking down tents. People have told me that the Department of Public Safety, which is our campus police, they took people's belongings. There was a huge altercation that was documented on footage. A campus police officer putting an organizer in a chokehold as they tried to detain the person. They later arrested the person, but then de-arrested them once protesters started surrounding that car where that person was being held. So it was really the introduction of campus security. And later in the afternoon, when droves of LAPD officers came in, where we started to see chaos and disruption to campus daily life, really, there were just protests. And if it were to be scheduled as normal, people could just walk by, go to classes. Of course, USC was kind of bracing for a law enforcement response and that sort of conflict. So they began locking certain classrooms and libraries. But what I've heard from students on the ground and just people who had been watching is if USC had not had such a drastic response to this protest, there wouldn't have been such a disruption as we saw later that evening with 93 people being arrested.
I mean, that's the sense. Same sense of talking with the people in Columbia, too, is that on campus, it was peaceful. There was no incidents of violence recorded like at all, which is curious when you then measure that against the response. In your discussions with with everybody on campus. I imagine you also talk with some faculty members. Where is blame for all of this being leveled? Is it primarily at the protesters? Is it at Carol Folt, USC president, and other USC leadership in how they have handled this from the start of the valedictorian controversy? Who are people blaming? Where are fingers being pointed, or are they not? I mean, is it just a sense of disappointment and just kind of malaise that we're stuck in this hyper tense environment right now?
Yeah, I think the timing of the repeated kind of series of announcements that USC has put out cutting down on the commencement has been interesting. That first valedictorian speech announcement came out after they had received kind of backlash and what they say are threats. That second announcement where they canceled outside commencement speakers happened the day after that protest where 300 people came out happened. And now this speech canceling the entire main commencement ceremony happened the day after that encampment protest where 200 people showed out calling for USC to divest from Israel. So I would definitely say that timing is interesting, where the protests are on people's minds as they read this announcement. But people I've spoken to, they also see through that. We just received a letter to the editor, the headline of which is pretty directly, "We do not trust you, Provost Guzman and President Folt." So we're seeing that blame kind of goes straight to the top, basically, where those decisions are being made. That has been the case since the valedictorian decision. Provost Guzman was the first to make that announcement. He made the announcement, but he never really attributed it to a specific person. They just said USC administration had made the decision. But when there was such extensive backlash later on Monday, we saw the LA Times sort of first report after they spoke to a USC official that President Folt had made the decision because of the safety concerns. So ever since then, really, that blame has gone straight up to the provost and the president.
Whether protests are peaceful or not so peaceful, should schools be intervening? Several top Congress members have called on universities to act by protecting their Jewish students, including Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. College campuses must be places of learning and discussion, Schumer wrote in a statement last week. Every American has a right to protest, but when protests shift to anti-Semitism, verbal abuse, intimidation, or glorification of October 7th violence against Jewish people, that crosses the line. Campuses must remain safe for all students. President Biden also condemned what he called anti-Semitic protests when asked about them by reporters. On the other side, CNN's Kara Swisher suggested on Saturday that it was anti-American to not support young people engaging in protests. Catherine Palmer, a reporter with Inside Higher Ed, joined Odyssey in New York City to share more.
Have these protests caught the schools off guard? Were they prepared for them?
No, it looks like as we've seen this school year go on, colleges and universities are just kind of having to figure it out as they go. And the goalposts keep moving and shifting, and the pressure from outside donors and politicians just keeps getting stronger.
Yeah, we heard that Robert Kraft, the Patriots owner, has pulled his financial support for Columbia. If this continues, could other schools see wealthy donors perhaps do the same thing?
Absolutely. I feel like this year has shown us how much power donors and lawmakers have in influencing how colleges are responding to protest. And I think this year may provide some good lessons for any possible contention over the election next November.
Now, these protests have disrupted operations at some schools. Columbia has switched over to online learning. Is there, Catherine, a fine line between letting students voice their opinions and protecting campus safety and operations?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's been the line that so many college administrators are trying to toe. But they're getting criticism from people on both sides of the debate that they're either not doing enough for campus safety or they're not doing enough to defend academic freedom or free expression. So that seems to be a very difficult thing to balance. So university leaders may do well to take direction from what they've learned this year and apply it to next year if there's continued protests over the war and over the election.
Yeah, you mentioned the election. Do you think we will see similar protests as we get closer to November?
Well, the other day I talked to a group called the Constructive Dialogue Institute, And they've actually developed a guide for university leaders to deal with the election next year. And they, back in the fall, before this school year began, they talked to several presidents, university presidents, who said they were anxious about the election. A lot of presidents are thinking back to 2016 with the election of Donald Trump. So right after that, there was some heightened unrest on campus with protests and other racist incidents. And so I think because the pandemic shut down a lot of in-person learning during the 2020 election, it's been 8 years since we've had an election on a fully in-person campus. So I think a lot of leaders are very concerned.
Aside from the protests, what's happening half a world away in Gaza is also having a political impact here in the United States. We're getting closer to the 2024 election in November, and many expect the candidates' plans for the Middle East to weigh heavily on who they decide to vote for. A recent CNN poll found that 44% of likely Biden voters don't like the way he's handled Gaza. Could Biden's support for Israel result in him losing support among Democrats? Margaret Brennan from CBS News Face the Nation shared more on the political impact of the protests with Odyssey.
Margaret, these protests, these things that are happening all over the country, you wonder what kind of an effect it's having on our leaders here in this country. And as we move toward an election, these are people who are going to be voting, and it is going to have a huge impact, even when you think about the conventions coming up.
Oh, it is. And we've been talking for months on Face the Nation about how deeply felt, particularly among young people and progressive Democrats and people of color, the upset with the Biden administration policy, specifically as it relates to continued support for military, the Israeli military's war in Gaza. And we know that it has now reached this crescendo on these college campuses. But then mixed in with these protests are at times these clearly anti-Semitic slogans or actions or individuals. And that then has sort of recast this in a different light. And it feels like people are talking past each other here. You had the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, going up to Columbia University in Manhattan and, you know, saying that this was all anti-Semitism and needed to be stopped, and calling for the firing of the president of the university. And in Texas, where there were protests, you had the governor saying everyone should be arrested. I raised this to Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, yesterday, and he was a bit more circumspect. He said, this is really an issue for the presidents of the universities themselves. There should be civil discourse on the universities. That is the intent of universities in the first place. So have a conversation about your differences. And if there is anti-Semitism, that should also be addressed. He was not leaning into in any way some of the threats we've heard in the House to do things like withhold federal funding, for example. He was basically saying this is not a place for the government. This is a place for local university leaders. But this is continuing to bubble. And as President Biden said this week, he condemned anti-Semitism, and then he condemned those who do not understand what is happening to the Palestinian people, drawing a clear distinction between the two sentiments. We're going to talk about this. And you're right, it does come up, particularly within the young voters, and the question of whether they will turn out for Joe Biden in the fall.
Among the protesters to face suspension at their universities is Isra Hirsi, the daughter of Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar. Hirsi is a student at Columbia University. She fell into trouble after she participated in, quote, unauthorized and repeated protests in support of Palestine. She argued that she was part of an encampment that was a really beautiful community space until police shut it down and arrested students who refused to leave. The school, in a suspension letter, said that they have to react if a student poses an ongoing threat of disruption of or interference with the normal operation of the college. Her mother, Representative Omar, visited Columbia and argued that opposing the war isn't anti-Semitic because she met Jewish students who were also against the attacks in Gaza. So, what's next for all of this? At Columbia, arrests made last week and this week add a new layer to the protest saga. Across the country, classes were also canceled at another California university, Cal Poly Humboldt, and students at Tulane and Loyola universities in New Orleans shut down a major thoroughfare to prove their might. In fact, in just the past 2 weeks, at least 800 people have been arrested on college campuses. Arrests have been made at Tulane, at the University of Texas at Austin, at Emerson University in Boston, at the University of Southern California, and at many more schools. What the students are demanding is that the United States stop funding Israel as it bombs Gaza in response to an October 7th terrorist attack by Hamas that killed approximately 1,200 people. This demand seems somewhat unlikely, as the U.S. and Israel are longtime allies. However, President Biden has urged Israel's leaders to work towards a ceasefire. Here at home, is this recent surge in protests an echo of the peace and love Vietnam War protests of the 1960s? Frank Garrity, a professor at history at Columbia University, teaches a class about the 1968 protests against the Vietnam War. He sees parallels to the time when U.S. students spoke out and mobilized against what they saw as an unjust war in Vietnam. But there's a key point of difference here. There's no need to burn draft cards because no American boots are on the ground in Gaza. Still, Alifa Choudhury at the University of Michigan told NPR it's no accident that the encampment there is at the same place where students in the 60s marched against the Vietnam War. We stand on that protest history today, she said, as today's students make their own mark on history. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strauser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay up.